Welcome to Peak Health, a radio show dedicated to empowering you to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you want. I'm Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island at Fern Cove Natural Medicine. I'm dedicated to helping you uncover the root cause of your symptoms so that you can get back on the road to feeling well again.
And I'm Claire Denise, certified health and wellness coach and a personal trainer. Our show is going to bring you information to help you take charge of your health. We're going to cover topics like IBS, heartburn, thyroid disorders, autoimmune diseases, osteoporosis, nutrition, and lots more.
Hi, Claire.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm pretty excited for the second half of the thyroid discussion today.
Yeah.
I'd love to kind of reiterate for everybody, but it was a whole packed half hour last time. So we're going to do the second half of the thyroid talk and encourage our listeners to go to the website and click on Peak Health, VOV website, that is, and see the show that's archived the first half.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, basically, we just talked about, you know, hypothyroidism, hyperthyroidism, and the symptoms of each and how the thyroid affects so many things in our body. And that's why sometimes we want to ask, you know, is it our thyroid that's causing a problem if we have certain symptoms?
Right.
That's just the basic synopsis.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. So let's see. I guess my question right now is about thyroid testing, because it sounded like you alluded to some things that people didn't get enough information.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. So the range for the typical test that your doctor will do is the TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. It's somewhat wide, and some naturopathic physicians and most functional medicine doctors, use a narrower range. So the typical range is about 0.5 to 5.5, whereas people who use a narrower range, maybe 0.5 to 2.5. So sometimes your doctor will say, oh, your TSH is fine at 3.5. But actually, it can be an indication that your thyroid hormone levels are low or starting to become low.
So why would other doctors use like a much wider range?
Yeah, that's a good question. Okay. I mean, these ranges get standardized based on, testing certain amount, of quote unquote healthy people. However, a lot of times people still have symptoms, at that higher end of the TSH range.
So
considering that, we want to be proactive. And if the thyroid is starting to become underactive, we want to figure out why and address it.
So if you have an MD test done and it's above 2.5, you might want to take a second look at it.
Yeah, I think so. 2.5 or 3 is usually when considering what else is going on in the body. So the tests that I normally recommend are obviously the TSH and then also the free T3 and free T4. So those are the hormones, the thyroid hormones that are in our body. And I say free because there is a majority of T3 and T4 that is bound to a protein in our blood, and it's inactive in that form, and it's not until it becomes free that it's active.
So it's really helpful. I think you just know a ton about so many things, but if you can keep it in lay terms for me, that's really helpful.
Yeah. Well, let me know. You just stop me if I start to go off into my scientific talk.
I like science, though.
Yeah, it's good. So the reverse T3 is another test that sometimes I will do on my patients. It's actually when the body takes normal T3 and it creates reverse T3, which happens during extreme stress. And that reverse T3 is inactive. And so things like surgery or a trauma, like a car accident or a whole body burn, the body will create that. And it's actually a natural mechanism to kind of slow down the body, saying like you need to rest and recover and we're not going to have as much, active thyroid hormone because you need to be resting to repair your body.
I see. So since we kind of live in a very chronically stressful world, that makes this test more important. correct?
It does. However, I don't see it elevated as much with just the chronic stress that we're talking about, like, you know, the money and the house and the kids. And it's more of that physical acute stress, but it is something to consider.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's the TPO antibodies, which is thyroid peroxidase, which is that enzyme in our thyroid that makes the hormones, as well as thyroglobulin antibodies. And thyroglobulin is the protein that combines with iodine to make thyroid hormone. So we can have antibodies to these parts of our thyroid or thyroid hormone that actually, you know, it's Hashimoto's, autoimmune disease. So if I'm suspecting that, I will test those on my patients. As well as, depending on the symptoms, there's the hyperthyroid autoimmunity, which is antibodies to your TSH receptor.
So what I am getting out of that is there is just the basic thyroid test, TSH, but there are numerous other tests that could be done that give you a ton more information.
Right.
Okay, got
Absolutely.
It. And then we are basically exploring whether the thyroid is either overactive or underactive.
Mm-hmm. And if there's autoimmune disease in that too.
Yeah, and since we'd like to look at root causes, particularly from the naturopathic perspective, so what is there something underlying it? Is it the root cause or is it a symptom? So what's underlying, like, underactive thyroid, hypo?
Right. So, like I mentioned, Hashimoto's or the autoimmune is a big portion of it. But outside of that, there are, you know, several different reasons for having an underactive thyroid. The first one I just want to mention is having poor blood sugar control.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a big issue with lots of people being pre-diabetic or diabetic.
Yeah. Yes. So I always check the thyroid on my diabetic patients. But dysglycemia is actually pretty common. That's kind of a fancy word, but it basically means abnormal blood sugar. And so what's happening is the body is losing the ability to keep the blood sugar stable. And it's has a big effect on our body. It affects our adrenal glands and it weakens our immune system and it creates other hormonal imbalances. And all of these things actually affect our thyroid gland.
Don't the adrenals and thyroid go out to play together a lot?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There is a
good buddies.
Yeah. They have a relationship and they play off of each other. And I think we'll talk about more about that when we talk about adrenals in this show. So just to talk about dysglycemia and unstable blood sugar. So there's hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar. And with that, people have cravings for sweets. They have irritability or lightheadedness when they miss a meal. They feel jittery or shaky. And they actually, when they eat, their fatigue is usually relieved. So that was one end of the spectrum. And then there's insulin resistance, which goes kind of along with hyperglycemia, so too much sugar in the blood. And we're going to do a show about diabetes and insulin resistance and prediabetes
That's going to be a good one.
It is. But with insulin resistance, so insulin is the hormone that gets sugar into our cells. So people who have insulin resistance, for some reason, their insulin doesn't work properly. And so they feel... the symptoms that they're going to experience is that they have fatigue after meals. They have a constant hunger. They crave sweets. It's not relieved after eating them. And sometimes they have a waist girth that's larger than their hip girth and increased appetite and thirst.
So, and aren't there some hormones that are supposed to turn on and off your appetite and make you feel full? And they say take 20 minutes to eat so that your stomach can tell your brain.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make that one comment about high blood sugar means that the glucose isn't leaving the bloodstream and getting into the cells, right? That's that hyperglycemia.
Yeah, we need that blood sugar to get, or the glucose to get into the cells so our body can
and
make
out of
energy.
The bloodstream.
Yeah. Yeah, so the key, if you're having hypothyroidism because of an imbalanced blood sugar is, you know, balancing your blood sugar. And so some of the recommendations that I have are eating a high quality protein breakfast and low carbs at breakfast.
Yeah, that's a big issue, you know, because a lot of people like to eat bread or sweets donuts at breakfast, which is a bad way to start off the day for your blood sugar.
Right. I recommend our listeners try eating the protein, you know, 10 to 15 grams of protein in the morning and just see how your energy is. It'll help to balance your blood sugar throughout the day.
Yeah, I had a client once who ate white rice, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And when I told him he could have eggs, he said his wife would be really angry. But when he came back the next time, about a couple of weeks later, his blood sugar was better. Just his fasting sugar was better.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. Yeah, so eating the protein for breakfast, eating protein every 2 to 3 hours throughout the day. And then if you're going to eat a high sugar food, you want to eat it with fiber, fat, or protein.
Do you have to eat it with all three?
No, just one of them.
So I can have ice cream? It has fat and protein.
Sure. You can have ice cream, but I also recommend you check your blood sugar after that and see how it is.
Oh, true.
But yeah, just having that fiber, fat, or protein will help to balance your blood sugar and not cause your blood sugar to spike. And then just like most of our, we've talked a lot about just eating a well-balanced diet with mostly vegetables and then quality meats and fats, if you eat meat, that is, or other protein sources.
And when you say quality, that would basically allude to the right kinds of fats in the meat, mostly pasture-raised.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. Same for fats. You want good fats like omega-3s, right. Not omega-6s.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then just the last thing I'll mention is that, you know, if you're still having a problem with your blood sugar, you know, see your doctor and they can help you work on that and maybe give you some nutrients to help to balance your blood sugar or deal with insulin resistance.
Well, okay. So that was a lot about just one cause of hypothyroidism being poor blood sugar control.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else? I hate to ask.
Okay. So the next thing I just want to talk about is poor digestive function. So poor digestive function, if we have inflammation in our gastrointestinal tract, it actually affects our adrenals. And then, like we were saying before, the adrenals and the thyroid interact. And so a lot of times our thyroid will downregulate when our adrenals are, when we have adrenal stress. So addressing any food allergens or addressing any imbalance of good or bad bacteria, that what I call dysbiosis, and making sure that we have adequate hydrochloric acid and digestive enzymes is really important so that we can not tax on our adrenals and then affect our thyroid.
Hmm.
Yeah.
There's those adrenals again.
I know. So the one thing I want to say about, imbalance of the bacteria in our gut can actually affect our conversion of T4 to T3. And remember, last show we talked about T3 is the active form. So if we have dysbiosis, we won't make as much T3 and then we won't have as much of the active hormone. So that's the main points with digestion, you know, addressing all those things, you know, talking to your doctor and finding out if you have dysbiosis or food allergies and things like that, optimizing your digestion.
Okay, which I know is another whole topic that we could do a show on, optimal digestion.
We're always saying that.
Yeah, that just means we have lots of shows in the future.
It's true. It's
by
so
the way,
exciting.
We're listening to The Voice of Vashon 101.9, and we're talking about underactive thyroid right now, and it's Claire and Lisa. Lisa Morse is an ND on the island at Fern Cove Health, and I am a health coach with a small business called Positive Aging.
Great. Okay. So what I want to say now is talk more about the adrenals and how they relate to our thyroid.
Okay. So now there they come again.
Yeah.
Blood sugar, digestion, adrenals.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
So the adrenals, for our listeners who don't know, they're walnut-shaped organs that sit on top of our kidneys. And they help us adapt to stress. Now, the stress that we deal with today is usually chronic stress, you know, related to money or related to our busy lifestyle or work or whatever. But it's as opposed to acute transient stress that, you know, our ancestors experienced in the past. And so obviously the stress affects our adrenals, but there's other stresses besides that mental, emotional, you know, associated with money and family and jobs and such. There's also the, like I said before, the blood sugar swings from high to low or dysglycemia, the gut infections, inflammation in the digestive tract, food intolerances can cause our adrenals to be stressed, as well as chronic viral infections and environmental toxins.
So, you know, if you've ever ever questioned whether nutrition and what you put in your body makes a difference or not, this just makes a huge statement that it does. It's sort of like putting diesel in a gas engine. It's just not going to perform. And I'm so blown away by, in the past, if I've had a symptom, like, you know, I've fortunately been pretty healthy, but if I've gone to a doctor with a specific symptom, then I get some kind of solution to it and I'm done. And what I really realize now is that there's a whole other host of conditions that a naturopath, for instance, looks at beyond the most obvious. And so I'm in awe of you, Lisa.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you, but you don't need to be. But I enjoy, you know, educating people. But yeah, there is everything. It's can be complicated. You know, there's a lot of interactions. And so right now we're just talking about, you know, all these things that can affect our thyroid. And so the adrenals are huge for that. What I've learned in school is that you don't just go right to treating the thyroid if there's a thyroid imbalance. You have to look at what's going on with the adrenals. So
interesting.
Yeah. So many symptoms, you know, can happen as a result of adrenal fatigue. But actually, fatigue is the biggest one. People feeling tired, exhausted, not able to get out of bed in the morning, needing coffee to, you know, boost themselves. And so the adrenal stress, it actually affects our hypothalamus and pituitary. And if you remember back in the last show, I talked about that's where the initiation of the thyroid hormone starts. Our hypothalamus talks to our pituitary, which then talks to our thyroid. So we can see how adrenal stress actually can result in low thyroid function.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that adrenal stress also decreases the conversion of T4 to T3. Remember I said gut dysbiosis does that as well as adrenal stress. So we have less free active form of T3 when we're under stress.
And T3 is the one we really need, right?
Yeah.
So we have to have that conversion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then... yeah, so it's really important to address adrenal health, you know, when we're assessing our thyroid health. We don't want to overlook that. And I think, actually, we need to have a show on adrenal health.
Put that on the list.
I had some feedback on my blog or on my Facebook, somebody, when I asked, what do you guys want to hear about? That was one of the responses I got. I want to hear about adrenal health and adrenal fatigue.
So I'll take a moment to encourage people. To let us know what you want to hear about. Or if you have questions that didn't come across clearly, let us know.
Yeah, go to my website, ferncovenaturalmedicine.com, and you can just send me a message on there. Yeah.
Okay, so we've added adrenals to the list. I almost hate to ask, is there anything else on this list that you want to mention?
Yeah, I want to mention neurotransmitters. So neurotransmitters are molecules that are made by our brain, and also actually they're made in our gut too. They're made a lot of different places, but they help transmit nerve signals. And so there's two that are really important for thyroid function, and that's serotonin and dopamine. And what these do is they actually act on the hypothalamus. You know, again, that's where all the thyroid function starts. And so if they are low, then we may not have as much, we may be hypothyroid if those two are low. And they also help with the conversion of T4 to T3. So now we have three things: the dysbiosis, the adrenal stress, and the neurotransmitters are all involved in converting T4 to T3.
So neurotransmitters are like feel-good hormones?
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah. So if people are experiencing A, lack of energy, B, sort of subdued mood, mm-hmm. Or depression on some scale, mm-hmm. It actually could be all related to low thyroid.
It could be. It could be. That's the challenge with all of this. It could be that. Yeah. It's a little imbalanced.
Like throwing at a dartboard, but getting to be a better and better shot.
Yeah. But it could be about the neurotransmitters. So symptoms of serotonin deficiency are loss of pleasure in hobbies, feeling overwhelmed, feeling inner rage, or not enjoying your relationships or favorite things that you used to do. Whereas dopamine deficiency presents as feeling worthless or hopeless, wanting to be alone, you know, lack of concern for your family or friends, and inability to finish tasks. Those are just some of the manifestations.
Can't we just be procrastinators and have it just be still okay?
Well,
we still get it done.
Yeah. I mean, that's entirely possible too. I mean, I have
a lot of knitting
sometimes.
Projects unfinished.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you know, if you're not feeling hopeless or worthless, you know, you're probably okay, Claire.
So far.
Okay. But anyways, so I want to say that the main reason for neurotransmitter imbalance is actually due to poor blood sugar control. So there is kind of loops back.
Yeah.
You know, that blood sugar, improper blood sugar control can lead to hypothyroidism. It can also lead to dopamine or serotonin imbalances, which then lead to hypothyroidism. So balance your blood sugar.
Yeah, it's too bad. You know, a lot of people have a preference either for salty, crunchy, or sugar.
True.
One of the
true.
Two. Mm-hmm. And yes. I can say that if once you get the sugar, say, balanced in your system, it does stop calling to you.
I agree.
And the cravings dissipate. But mm-hmm. it's taking a few days to just really take yourself by the scruff of the neck. And don't eat any sugar or things that break down into sugar quickly, like simple carbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My two cents.
I like it. Yeah. So one more thing I just want to say. To have proper serotonin and dopamine, we have to have proper methylation. So that's basically if you ever remember back to chemistry class, methylation is a carbon molecule with three or four hydrogens bound to it. And so our body does this process of methylation to make neurotransmitters and other molecules, important molecules in our body. And so if we don't have proper methylation, which can be due to low stomach acid, taking acid blockers, actually oral contraceptives deplete our methyl donors. We want to make sure that we're getting proper methyl donors. And that would be through a methyl vitamin B12. And the form would be methylcobalamin versus cyanocobalamin.
Cyano, that sounds like poison.
Yeah, cyanide? It is. It has a cyanide molecule in it. So,
whoa.
Yeah, so we prefer methylcobalamin because it helps us methylate better. Gives us, yeah.
Well, I'm just sort of curious as we're talking about this. It's not such a great idea to just go to the shelf in the grocery or the super supplements mm-hmm. and pick things out that you think might
I agree.
Work.
I think you need to talk to somebody, a doctor, that can help guide you to the proper supplements.
Yeah, because it could be B12, one of, 40 different brands, and you don't know why one is different from the other mm-hmm. or if they actually are going to give you what they say they will, because they're not necessarily regulated.
Exactly. Great. I like it, Claire.
Well, this is a lot of information.
Yeah.
But I'm impressed with the idea that nutrition can have a big influence on hypothyroidism. So can you talk about that a little bit?
It can. I mean, I want to say that, people want to know, hey, can I just eat my way to a better thyroid function?
Well, when you're talking about all these blood sugar relationships.
Yeah, and you can. So there, in some ways you can.
Okay, because it just seems like blood sugar, if you don't have type 1 diabetes, if you have type 2, there's certainly a lot of dietary things that are mm-hmm. better for you to do mm-hmm. than not.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, balancing your blood sugar, obviously. But as far as nutrients, I think it does definitely support the thyroid when eating certain nutrients. or taking certain supplements. But we still want to go back and look at, hey, why is the thyroid underactive? Is it the blood sugar? Is it the gut? You know, is it the adrenals or is it the neurotransmitters?
Uh-huh.
So some of the...
It makes sense.
Yeah. So some of the nutrients that I recommend are essential fatty acids. So like the omega-3s, they actually help with proper cell communication. And as well, selenium, some minerals such as selenium, copper, magnesium, zinc. They help the actual thyroid peroxidase enzyme work. The enzyme needs those molecules, you know, those vitamins or minerals to work. And so just making sure that we're, you know, getting that in our food.
So selenium, my favorite tip is to go to Trader Joe's and buy some Brazil nuts.
Yeah.
And keep them in the fridge and have one or two a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great.
They are a great source of selenium.
Yep. I love it.
So do you think people should take just a vitamin? And I know there can be a difference in quality of vitamins.
I mean, general
multivitamin.
Absolutely, yeah. What I recommend is a whole foods vitamin. So it's made from food.
Didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, that's okay.
Well, I just was going to say that I recognize that there are vitamins made from whole foods and there are vitamins made in a lab.
Correct.
And that could, they could be significantly different.
Yeah. Yeah. So I recommend Whole Foods Vitamin. Innate Response is the brand that I use. There are some other brands too, but it's just eating the, you know, when it's food based, it's easier for our body to absorb it. So, and you know, I don't recommend everyone takes a multivitamin. It depends on your situation. So again, talk to your doctor. Another thing I just want to mention, that selenium is important for converting T4 to T3. So if your labs show a low free T3 and a high free T4, make sure that you're getting selenium in your diet with the Brazil nuts, like Claire mentioned. And then I just want to touch on something, tyrosine and iodine. This is something that a lot of times is recommended for thyroid conditions, hypothyroid. And actually the iodine can be problematic for people with Hashimoto's, can actually cause it to flare more. And then tyrosine, it actually contributes, so it's used to make thyroid hormone, tyrosine is, so that's good. But it also is used to make epinephrine and norepinephrine, which can make people feel wired or energetic or just super wired. We don't want more epinephrine if we're, you know, already in this stressed out society.
Right. I remember going to the dentist and wondering why I started feeling jumpy and shaky. And it was because there was epinephrine in the Novocaine. So
yeah.
I have to ask for no epinephrine in the Novocaine.
Yeah. So I would not recommend either of these for people with hypothyroidism. Again, just, you know, it's going back to finding the root cause of the hypothyroidism rather than trying to give some, you know, tyrosine or iodine to make it better. You want to address the root cause.
Okay. So can we wrap this up? And could you give me a couple of like takeaways that sort of summarize what we've talked about?
Yeah.
I think I'll go back and listen to this again, too.
Okay. Sounds good. So, you know, if you're experiencing symptoms of hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism, I want you to ask your doctor for more than just a TSH test. At least get a free T3, a free T4, and possibly TPO or thyroglobulin antibodies, just to make sure that you don't have an autoimmune condition, you know, starting or going on. We always want
Hopefully the doctor will be willing to do that.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Well, they could come to you
if they
for
don't.
Sure.
And if they don't, yeah, find somebody who will, because there are doctors that will help you with that. And then, also just find somebody that's going to help you address, you know, whatever, if you do have abnormal thyroid levels or if you do have a Hashimoto's, you know, find someone that's going to help you address that. And you don't want to just let your whatever's going on with you progress until it's worsened. It's important to address it as soon as you can.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait until you're having extreme symptoms.
Yeah.
Pay attention to your body.
Right. So if your lab values are at either end, like above, at either end of the range, you know, kind of low or kind of high, you should investigate. And especially if your TSH is above 3, I would recommend that you investigate.
All right. On that note, we're going to wrap up.
Yeah.
Thank you for this wonderful half hour of edification, Dr. Lisa.
Yeah, of course. I want to just remind our listeners, this is Peak Health Radio Show, where we're dedicated to educating and inspiring you, our listeners, to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you desire. Until next time.
Okay. Thanks so much for listening. Take care of yourself. Bye, Lisa.
Bye-bye.